Okay, it's Ray Giannini here doing Genesis 31 tonight, and it's March 10th, 2021. So I wanted to let me just get our slideshow going here. I wanted to just do a quick review before we get into chapter 31, and did want to mention the schedule coming up. And so, as I mentioned before, I would be doing Genesis 31 tonight. Next time I'll be doing Genesis 32 and 33 as we finish the life of Jacob. Then our brother Joel will be doing Genesis 34. Then I've asked John Duckhorn to do the next two if he's available. I don't know. And then I've also asked Tom Peterson to begin the life of Joseph for us. Just some planning in advance here. So we're at Genesis 31, and let's take a look at our first slide here. Again, I wanted to mention just for folks that might not have been regularly attending the study, and it's just important also to keep this in mind that the book of Genesis is written. It's a book that Moses had written, sorry, to the Exodus Jews, the children of Israel. And we ask why. And the number one reason is to remind them of where they came from. And then a second very good reason is that it is God who has separated a people to himself, the Israelites. What is and they were referred to as the apple of his eye in the Psalms. Some folks have asked me to share some of the notes that I use on the study. So tonight I'm just going to make just have everything available. So I hope it's not too tedious for folks. As we remember from Genesis 28, Jacob had stopped for the night on his way to his uncle Laban's house at Haran in Padan Aram. He had dreamed of angels on a stairway extending to heaven. And the point of the story is that God was present with Jacob wherever he went. And this was symbolized by the ladder explained in words by God and recognized in faith by Jacob. So we see these little kernels of faith that are developing in Jacob's life. Jacob's name, of course, means deceiver. And he has fled from his parents' house to avoid the wrath of his brother, who he deceived. And he's looking for a wife. And according to his mom's counsel, he's going to visit his uncle Laban. God again reiterated to Jacob the covenant made with Abraham and Isaac. He had promised him the land, descendants as numerous as the dust of the sand of the seashore, the dust that exists, and a universal blessing through him. God also promised to protect and to be with Jacob while he was out of the land and to see that he returned to the exact same spot. Again, a little bit more review, the promises of the covenant confirmed at Bethel. Jacob's vision at Bethel was based on God's pure grace. Again, Jacob was a deceiver. His life didn't display particular piety, but God, in his sovereignty, chose to work with Jacob as he had chosen to work with Isaac and Abraham before him. God appeared to Jacob to assure him of his promise of blessing and protection, prompting in Jacob a tremendous worshipful response in which he vowed loyalty. And these are a couple of things that we saw in previous sessions here. And chapters 29 to 33 form a block that displays how God kept his promise to bless Jacob abundantly. They also show how God disciplined this patriarch as he was molding him, molding his faith, and making him into a man of God. A couple of things more. Jacob's worshipful response upon seeing the ladder included having fear before the Lord, erecting a memorial stone, a pillar, consecrating the stone by anointing it with oil, naming the place Bethel or House of God to commemorate the event, and making a vow in which he expressed for the first time his faith in the Lord will be my God, and promising to tithe. All these enhance the central idea of God's protecting presence in Jacob's life. As we saw in previous times, the map here depicts Jacob's travels. We're at the very top, the orange section, Act 3 of his journey, his life. And we'll see tonight that he's actually going to begin Act 4, the travel back to Canaan. A little bit more review is before we begin. When in Genesis 29, when Jacob watered Laban's flocks, there was a note of goodwill and an anticipation that there would be something special going on. In the next couple of chapters, we see how Laban and his flocks prospered in Jacob's presence. In contrast to Laban's lazy shepherds or his sons, Jacob was generous, zealous, hardworking. Jacob had a mission and a quest. And this is very much on a parallel basis with, for instance, Pharaoh seeing that the Hebrews in Exodus were blessed by God and produced an enormous amount of tremendous things because God was blessing. He clearly could see, the Pharaohs could clearly see the contrast between God's blessing and their own state of affairs. The last time we saw in Genesis 30, verses 25 through 43, Jacob's agreement with Laban. If you remember from verse 31 of chapter 30, Jacob said, "And now, when shall I also provide for my own house?" Now, he had paid for his two wives at that point. And so he, Laban, said, "What shall I give you? Seems so generous." And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks." Verse 32, "Let me pass through all your flock today, removing all from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages." Now, later on in the next chapter, we're going to find out that Jacob had some insight as to why he did that. So, I just wanted to, I guess I went off a slideshow here. Start again. I don't know what happened. Back down to... a little technical okay, well, if can you still see the screen fairly well there?
Yeah.
Okay. So just a few applications of chapter 30. These Bible passages that we saw show God prospered Jacob and started to make from him a great nation. This is the key point. God taking a man in Abram, bringing him into the promised land and beginning to build this nation that he is going to use to spread the word to the world. All Israelites could thus look back and see their ancestry in Jacob and the conflict of the women, the two wives, fighting among themselves, which we saw last time in Genesis 28. As brothers, Jacob's sons, the sons of Jacob, who eventually become Israel, the 12 tribes, they were not to become envious like their mothers nor deceivers like their father Jacob. Again, these are lessons that are written down for them. They could see that God is faithful in keeping his promises. So we come to Genesis 31, and a couple of things to keep in mind. Jacob has prospered mightily in fulfillment of God's promise at Bethel. Just minimize this. Laban now received in part the payback due him. It's a testimony to the blessing of God that Jacob prospered with Laban and that Jacob returned unharmed to his homeland. An interesting struggle developed between Jacob and Laban. Laban's injustice and craftiness come before Jacob's plans to escape Laban, just as Isaac's attempt to bless Esau against God's will had earlier prompted Jacob's deception. There are again these word plays and contrasts that Moses is making here in writing this down. In both cases, the attempt to cheat Jacob was actually overcome by Jacob. Afterward, however, Jacob viewed his real gain as divine blessing, though he had to accept the effects, the fear, and the danger of his craftiness. So as we see in toward the end, the next time, we'll see that he lived in fear and danger, and particularly as he gets closer to reuniting with his brother Esau, there's a whole lot of stress that goes into that event because of past events. So let's read chapter 31, verses 1 through 16. Trying to get the words into PowerPoint here. Some of the fonts kind of tend to shrink. But if you want to turn to your Bibles, I have the New King James. Let's read this first portion. So Genesis 31, beginning in verse 1. "Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all his wealth.' And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, or his facial expression, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you.'" Verse 4, "So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock, and he said to them, 'I see your father's countenance, that it's not favorable toward me as before. but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might, I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. Verse 8. If he said, thus the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said, thus the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. Verse 10, and it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leapt upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see, all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion of inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. Verse 16, for all these riches which God had taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now, then, whatever God has said to you, do it. So in the beginning of chapter 31, we find that Jacob left for Canaan for two interrelated reasons. The first reason is the hatred by Laban's sons was growing against Jacob, and Laban was in a foul and dangerous mood. The question is, did God stir up the heat to move Jacob? Who knows? Second, God told Jacob to return to his own land. Verse 3, here was a divine call to leave for the land of promise. So God in his sovereignty is making a decisive effort to separate Jacob from this situation here. Jacob gave a moving and very effective speech to his two wives who met him at his request out in the fields. Jacob is now maturing. It's not all about his self-defense. You can see that when God speaks to him, he says, here am I. He wanted to take with him a willing family, so he attested to God's leading and provision. You can contrast this with his treatment of his wives in Genesis 29. He has become more mature now. He now must keep the vow he made at Bethel in chapter 28. The response of both women was faith as well. Laban had wasted his daughter's wealth and had lost their goodwill, so they were willing to leave their father. And in a Bedouin culture, this is a big deal. So let's look at the next section here, verses 17 through 21. If there are any comments, please feel free to make any comments that you would like. Verses 17 through 21. And again, once again, the scriptures say, when Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Verse 20, and Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. Verse 21, so he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So we have here the flight starting, but it was more risky than Jacob had hoped because Rachel stole Laban's household gods. The Hebrew word is teraphim, household gods, figurines, household idols. This shows the pagan influence in Laban's family. A wordplay shows Rachel to be a true Jacob, for there were parallel thefts here. He stole away and she stole the gods. So the question that is begged here is, did she tell herself she deserved them since Laban had turned the tables on her in the name of custom and had deprived her of her right to marry first? Whatever the reason, her hard-hearted self-interest really almost brought some significant disaster. To have Laban's household gods may have meant the right to inheritance. They were most likely made with precious metals. They were probably worth a lot. It certainly meant Laban was without what he thought was his protection. This is why Laban pursues Jacob. It was one thing for Jacob to take his flocks and families, but his gods too? Did Laban suspect that Jacob would try to steal back to Haran someday and claim all of Laban's estate? Failing to find the gods, Laban later, verses 43 and 53, made a treaty to keep this Jacob, the troublemaker, out of his territory. So we come to the next section here, verses 22 through 35. And again, I would just ask if anybody has any questions. Any comments? Okay, let's take a look at the next section. Verse 22, and Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. Verse 26, and Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, 'Perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have taken, what I have of yours, and take it with you.' For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them." Verse 33, and Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. Verse 35, and she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, but did not find the household idols. So this section opens up with a 7-day pursuit to Gilead, east of the Jordan River. In the 7-day pursuit, just as Laban was catching up with Jacob, Laban was warned by God in a dream not to speak good or bad to Jacob. Without this decisive act of God, Jacob might not have brought anything home with him. That's how stingy Laban was. Thus, this Bedouin struggle continues. Here is a map. You can see that, if you recall from the previous map, we're way at the top of the map, and Jacob begins his route in the upper right-hand corner, and now he's in this mountainous region. Here's a little picture of two guys, certainly not exchanging pleasantries by any means. These are the mountains of Gilead. You can see it's a pretty rugged place, surrounded by the beauty by the Jordan River. So in this controversy between Jacob and Laban, there's this legal speak or legal jargon that is used to describe their civil suit, I guess, this accusation, both accusations. So there are two strives or strifes involved here. In the first strife or accusation, Laban claimed that Jacob had robbed him, but he presented himself as a hurt father, verse 28, and also as a baffled or confused avenger, verse 29. When Laban demanded that Jacob return the household gods, Jacob put the death penalty on Rachel unknowingly. There's a very famous defense attorney, and he does a blog, and he talks about different techniques in the courtroom. And he says it never fails that when he's reviewing testimony in a criminal case or civil case, that many folks make accusations, but in fact, the accuser is in fact doing those very things. And they coined this term, it's called accusation by confession. And we see this with Laban here. He's making all these accusations, but he in fact is doing the very things that he's accusing others of. Laban was deceived by Rachel, and she put the idols in her camel's saddle and sat on the saddle in her tent. So apparently Laban never dreamed that a woman would dare take a chance to contaminate the idols. So she's, you recall from the law, she is having her period, and of course then she is effectively defiled. And so this is a big blow, or a big kind of a, I guess a huge issue of disrespect that was shown to these household gods, small g, that they became nothing gods, for a woman who claimed to be unclean sat on them. So it's all these funny things that go on, but in effect, Rachel kind of disses these household gods. So let's look at verses 36 and 42. Now this is a long chapter and I'm trying to move a little bit quickly here. Then Jacob, verse 36, chapter 31, and Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it before me, set it before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. There I was in the day the drought consumed me and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes." Verse 41, "Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." So now we find this second strife or accusation that's coming from Jacob now. First it was Laban, now Jacob. The words took Laban to task, and they literally mean had a strife or controversy related with Laban here. And I just used the Bible Knowledge Commentary to try to put some of the words here, Hebrew words, their roots. Laban, the prosecutor, now became the accused. Ignorant of Rachel's theft of the idols, Jacob angrily made a devastating counterattack or counterpunch. He recounted the hardships he had undergone for Laban for 20 years. He took financial losses while caring for Laban's flocks during the heat of the day and the cold of the night. He mentions the fear of Isaac. The God Isaac feared was with Jacob, and that God had seen his hardship and hard work. So obviously, when Jacob is serving his time, so to speak, you know, first a 7 year, then another 7 year period, then another secure period, much like Moses probably in the backwoods of Midian, or some of the other Bible characters that we see, he did a lot of thinking while he was doing shepherd's work. And I'm sure over time, the Lord began to work on him, and he began to review his life, like so many of us, reviewing our lives in the past ways of doing business. And as we have the believing intake of the scriptures, we begin to mature and we realize perhaps it's better to do it God's way. And so Jacob is displaying these things. And so now we come to the second last portion, verses 43 through 55. I would again pause if anybody has any comments. Okay, so let's
Hey,
take a look.
Ray.
Oh, yes, sure.
Neil here.
Yes.
I was thinking of a couple of incidents that kind of reminded me of that whole stolen idol. So
Sure.
a few chapters before the end of Judges is like Judges 18, and this group of Danites steals this idol, and this man Micah tries to overtake these 600 men and says, "You stole my idol." And they're basically said, "You better leave with your life now and leave us alone." And they just continue on with the idol. But it's kind of the confrontation that makes me think of this. So kind of like Laban goes and confronts Jacob. And then the other one would be when like Joseph puts his cup into Benjamin's pouch. Or maybe it isn't, maybe I'm getting that wrong, but one of his brothers, he puts his
No,
cup.
it's, yeah, you're
And
right.
then they overtake him and say, you took my cup. So that he wasn't an idol, but he used to practice divination with it. So that just was another kind of thing that reminded me of like a confrontation of a stolen something.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said last time when we were talking about the mandrakes, and the Bible really records the fact that just like today, we're surrounded by pagan influences, some of which are clearly seen, readily apparent, and others that kind of work their way in, and God's attempt to separate his people. You think about Esau. Taking, when Jeff was doing that portion, Esau deliberately took wives, Canaanite wives. And through all of the machinations of these characters, God continues to steer them so that he can have this line devoted to his particular purposes. But there, this pagan culture is everywhere. It's just everywhere in the thinking and in the customs and such. And I think the Bible clearly makes note of that. And I think it just adds to its authenticity. Yeah, it's interesting, these stories. Well, let's take a look at verses 43 through 55. Verse 43, and Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters, or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." Just verse 45. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban called it, this pronunciation I don't have, Jagar Sahadutha. I like the old, I have an old King James, and I particularly like the King James Version because they use the phonetics there and it's easier to make pronounced words. But anyway, so Jacob called it Gilead or Gilead. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore, its name was called, I'm sorry, therefore, its name was called Gilead. Also Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is this heap. And here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and the pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons and daughters, and blessed them. But Laban departed and returned to his place. So here Laban suggests that they make this covenant, this treaty, for a boundary between them, Jacob and Laban. Laban asks for this. Jacob didn't need it. He had already secured his position, but Jacob neither needed it nor cared for it. Jacob set up a tall stone and then piled a heap of stones around it. And Laban called them by his the Aramaic name, but Jacob called them by the Hebrew Gilead. Regarding this boundary and this covenant, Laban explained that the name means a heap of witness, but he added the Hebrew name Mizpah, watchtower, in trusting God to watch over them. So the rules were that Jacob would not harm Laban's daughters and that Jacob and Laban would stay apart, verse 52. In expressing the rules or the stipulations of this treaty or agreement, Laban used many words to cover up his untrustworthiness. So the undependable man was trying to convey that Jacob was a slippery character who had to be bound by a whole set of rules and stipulations. And Laban tries to terrify Jacob as though he were ungodly and needed to be threatened. This is again another contrast. Jacob is maturing in the Lord. He's being guided by the Lord, but we have an ungodly man who thinks that these rules are necessary here. He even appropriated the heap of stones, which were Jacob's, and calls them his own, monument Jacob had made. This is Laban at his best. This is the flesh versus increasing godliness of Jacob's life. Laban is quite a character. Both the boundary settlement and the wives' rights show that Laban and Jacob wanted to confirm the status quo. But the treaty also marked a break with the East for the family of Israel. God is now returning them to the place where he wants them. So even though all these things had happened in the past, there's all this tension, it effectively works. It works out for good, just like Romans chapter 8, verses 28 through 30. All of the stuff that goes on ultimately works for good in the life of the believer. This boundary treaty marked out the frontier in the hill country of Gilead. So these are the important points to take away from this portion here. Finally, we just want to look at a couple of applications here. The whole chapter really shows proof of the divine protection and prosperity that we have seen in Jacob's life so far. And it's an example to us to help build our faith in God's word. Remember that Abraham was an extraordinarily wealthy man. He had his own private army, or he could assemble a private army of his own. Because he continually makes choices to obey God, it's almost as if it is very much this. Abraham gains this treasure trove of spiritual insight and a greater knowledge of the Lord. And it's almost as if God says, and by the way, I'll give you the trinkets, the physical stuff, which amounted to an enormous amount of wealth. But the real wealth was spiritual, drawing closer to the Lord, and the spiritual insight gained as Abraham walked with the Lord. We see that in Isaac's life, although there isn't as much said about Isaac. But then in Jacob, we see this man emerging here. We see that Jacob matures in his faith, and we also see this in our own lives as we continue to walk with the Lord. I'll just leave you with this inspirational verse. Hopefully we can have a little bit of discussion. Romans 15, verse 4, for whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. And then I would open it up for some discussion if people have some comments to make. I would welcome that, definitely. We can take this off of share screen. Any comments? thoughts. Okay, we can move to our prayer time and announcements.